position number 21649, wheel 3.
Frank, here's reel 3.
In addition to the Fleet Air Arm and RAF people and sailors, we were transporting the Canadian wounded from Dieppe, from the Dieppe raid, back to Canada. And we also were transporting the wives and families of some of the people who were engaged in the training of the RAF and Fleet Air Arm people in Canada and America. So it was quite a mixed number of people on board, to the tune of about 5,000 people. I remember we arrived in Halifax, Nova Scotia on Christmas Eve, 1942, I think it was, yes, Christmas Eve, and I could hardly believe the sight of normal street lighting again, because we had endured the blackout in this country and obviously on board for quite some time. And we entrained, I think it was the following morning, in Halifax, and proceeded by train to Montreal, where we were switched then down into America to arrive at Asbury Park in New Jersey. I think it was 3 days later, something of that order. It's a very comfortable journey. I also remember the sight of the Canadian villages which we passed along the Restigouche River, all brilliantly illuminated with Christmas candles. I remember seeing the people in their sleighs, and they were dressed in fur coats and fur hats. I remember the Canadian equivalent of the WRVS, or WVS as they would be in this country then, who came to the station, every station where we stopped, with beautiful Canadian apples and steaming cups of coffee for us. And I quite enjoyed that train journey. We had an excellent Christmas dinner served. And when we got to Asbury Park in New Jersey, we were sort of half expecting to be put into normal British barracks, a British type barracks, but no. The two largest hotels in the town had been taken over for the Navy, and it was there which there where we were quartered. There was nothing brilliant about the accommodation, but it was comfortable. At one time, I can recall there was a bit of a row about the display of the white ensign on the top of the building, because it was flown at a greater height than the American flag in the town. It wasn't flown at that height intentionally, it was just the building was that high and that's where the flag went. But some idiot locally decided that because that was flown higher than the American flag, that we were insulting them. I can recall that there were quite a lot of Australian naval people there at the time, quite a lot of South African naval people there at the time, and there was a deal of animosity between the Australians and the South Africans. Constant.
Why?
I think it was because of the way in which the Australians perceived the South Africans as treating their native population, the blacks. Whether that is so or not, I really don't know, but there was a lot of animosity between them. If I recall correctly, their sailors were there to pick up what the heck were they? Minesweepers, I think, if I remember rightly. Yes, they were BIMS, BYMS. We were there to pick up these British destroyer escorts. But it was some little time before the actual our actual ship was completed in Boston. And we joined her down there. I can't remember the exact date, though I have recently purchased a book about the Captain Class frigates, which will give me the exact date.
Don't worry, it's on record anyway.
It is, right. I think it was February 1943.
What was the ship?
That was HMS Bainton.
B-A-Y?
B-A-Y-N-T-U-N. She was unique. It was the first naval vessel ever built by America for the British Navy. I didn't know until I got the book that we received her under lease land provisions, which existed, which meant that if there was any ship left, we had to give it back to them when we'd finished with it. There were several things about her which were interesting. One, I say she was the first naval vessel to be built by America for this country. She was the first major war vessel to be all welded. She was the first major war vessel to be diesel electrically propelled. And I think that'll do for now, but she was the first of lots of things. And we found that she was not built for you to use hammocks. We actually had bunks in three tiers. When you bear in mind that the average roll we discovered of the Bainton was somewhere around about 40 degrees, it rapidly is obvious that it was not very comfortable in the bunks. And it wasn't unusual for people to be thrown out of them in the middle, whilst we were crossing the Atlantic, to be thrown out of them and damaged physically in some way. Perhaps, one thing, the actual taking over this vessel must have had a deal of significance, because we carried for, I can't remember the actual total journey, because I can't remember where we picked him up and where we dropped him. Admiral King, I think at the time he was commander of the American Eastern Seaboard Fleet. He travelled with us. It could have been to Bermuda, or it could have been as far as Williamsburg, Virginia. But he certainly travelled with us, made himself very unpopular. I think he imagined that he was not only in charge of the United States Navy Eastern Seaboard Fleet, but that he was also in charge of us. He and the captain did not get on very well together.
Did you have any brushes with Admiral King?
In passing, yes, because apart from being the gun layer of A gun and the hedgehog firer, I was also the ship's writer and occupied a cabin adjacent to the captain's cabin. So I did get the odd brusque word from Admiral King, such as "get out of my way, sailor," and things like that. The working up process took quite a long time because we were the first of class, and there's great interest shown in the ship by the American Navy and by our Navy. And it was quite some time before we came back over to the UK. We did working up round Bermuda, one or two funny incidents there. Getting to Bermuda was a big problem. We ran into the back end of a hurricane, and in the course of that hurricane, there were, I think it was 12 of us who were capable of operating a ship. The rest were so badly affected either by seasickness or by injuries sustained in the hurricane that we wouldn't have been able to fight that ship at all. The radios were welded to desktops, and they came adrift from the desktops and swept the operators across the cabin with them. The same thing applied to the radar set. We will never understand how a gyro compass actually swung out of its housing, so that it was completely useless, and we had to use magnetic compass. I can recall I was one of the 12 who did not suffer either injury or seasickness, and being sent down to the tiller flat to steer directly onto the rudder from a distance separating the wheel from the rudder being about 12 feet. With seas running like that, that was quite difficult. But it was made even more difficult by the fact that the officers on the bridge, which was an open bridge, were trying to steer by magnetic compass and read the chart almost simultaneously, that I kept getting contrary instructions as to which way to steer. Like, steer south-south-west. Oh, bloody hell, no, I mean south-south-east. Oh, no, fuck it, I mean so-and-so. And I had these contrary instructions for quite a long time. Unfortunately, the stoker who was sent down with me to assist on the wheel and to undress me because, or partially undress me, because we had been in cold weather gear prior to meeting the hurricane, he never heard any of these orders at all because he succumbed to the suffocating temperature down there and fell onto the deck and lay there throughout proceedings. When we eventually re-established contact with Bermuda, instead of being 15 miles away, we were about 75 miles away. And we were in a very sorry state when we actually steamed into Bermuda. We needed dockyard repairs of a fair order. It was quite significant that when I was asked as a ship's writer to open the safe and produce some documents for the captain, I was unable to operate the safe door because it was not operated by a key, it was operated by a combination lock. And no matter what we did, it was impossible to open that door. I suffered a great deal of abuse, as did the coxswain and the navigating officer, from the captain, because he was convinced that we had forgotten the combination. But when we commissioned, I remember very carefully carving the numbers on the underside of my desk. And eventually I invited the captain to listen carefully to the numbers which I read out and to try and open the door himself. It was only then that he became convinced that there was something wrong with the safe and not that there was something wrong with every member of his crew. We got the safe firm to come down from New York, I think it was, and they found that they couldn't get into the safe through the door. They had to get in through the back, which was adjacent to the bulkhead separating our room from the captain's cabin. This displeased the captain considerably, because it was going to disturb his quarters. However, they did get in, they got the documents, and they said that never in their lives had they seen a combination lock in such a mess. It was jumbled and jammed together by the seas which we had encountered. And we insisted that the replacement safe should be one of British pattern, or at best, or at least American pattern, operated by a key and not a combination lock. Quite an interesting episode in Bermuda was when some of the senior rates coming back from onshore thought that they'd come across a very pleasant local park and walked through it. I think to find that there was a very nice pond there and there's some very nice banana trees. And they decided it'd be a jolly good idea if we had some of those bananas on board. And they carried them over their shoulders from this beautiful park back to the ship, leaving behind a trail of bananas showing very clearly which route they'd taken. It was then discovered it was not a beautiful park, but it was the governor's residence grounds from which the bananas had been stolen. Anyhow, we made our way back to this country and not without some difficulty. There was a cruiser requiring assistance in the South Atlantic, if I remember rightly, and we were asked to go to her help. But we were unable to do so because our engines had become defective and we had quite a lot of equipment still not operational. And two others of the class, I think they were Devonport and Chatham based ships, which were the second and third, they were also instructed to go to assist, and for reasons, some reason, neither of them was able to proceed because of defects in the construction. So it was rather sad. We did eventually get back to UK, and I remember we docked at Blackwall Docks. And I thought that we were about to sink in the dock because of the weight of gold braid that descended upon us. There must have been more admirals descend on the Bainton that day than there are in the Royal Navy today. Now I can recall assisting the captain to write the report on the ship. And it was not a particularly favourable report. We were supposed to do 28 knots. To my recollection, the fastest we ever achieved was 21.8, which was not very helpful when you were chasing U-boats. Our guns were pitiful. They were American 3-inch quick firing guns. And we had no protection from the elements or from the enemy on these guns. They were wide open. My gun was an AA gun, and I can distinctly recall the sea coming over house high onto the forecastle, and literally having to hang on to the handles, which I was supposed to be used for laying the gun and firing the gun. I have to hang on to those in order to avoid being washed overboard. The Hedgehog was mounted behind that, and it was useful that that had a shield in front of it to prevent you getting the backfire from the Hedgehog. That was quite useful to shelter behind when the seas were really bad. The diesel electric propulsion didn't work particularly well because of the violent movement of the ship. And it was quite interesting that often when the Atlantic appeared to be calm, because of the long Atlantic swells, you got severe movement of any vessel on the surface. We were used for convoy protection work. But the next voyage which we made back from America, we came back on our own. If I remember rightly, on a more southerly course than it was normally taken, because they had removed most of one mess deck, or all of one mess deck, in order to accommodate boxes of, I think it was new radar equipment which were coming over to this country, and we were the transport for them rather than being an escort. We arrived safely with the gear, and I never knew quite what happened to it. We were back over to America after that again, and then we came back with a very big convoy. We weren't very happy that we were progressively shunted down the line to look after the slowest moving ships in the convoy. And we finished up by escorting two trawlers up to Iceland, who, when told to make less smoke, signaled back, "On your way, sailor." We then proceeded to Cardiff, where the captain lived. He wasn't in a very good mood when he left the ship, but unfortunately, we were docking in the coal dock with a strong wind blowing. And someone forgot to give the order to check away on the head rope when the captain decided to go astern. Net result being that the bows swung into the jetty, slammed into it, severed the port anchor, which dropped to the bottom of the dock. We removed the bollard to which we were trying to secure, and all in all, the captain was not at all pleased and decided that there would be no shore leave after having been at sea for about 3 weeks. He had almost a mutinous crew. We were very pleased when we had to summon him from his home within a matter of hours to proceed out to escort, I think it was an aircraft carrying a cruiser, up the Irish Sea. This we did. We were then told to proceed up the Clyde to Greenock. If I recall correctly, we had just got to Greenock, and I don't think we'd even tied up when we were told to go and look for a suspected ditched aircraft off Ailsa Craig. Having done that, we then had to escort, I forget which vehicle now, which vessel now, up to Londonderry. And then eventually, after literally having been at sea backwards, you know, on the Atlantic crossing and up and down the UK coast for the best part of a month, it was a month in fact, we actually tied up in Gladstone Dock in Liverpool. That was the point at which I actually left the Bainton when I was sent on commission course.
Had it been a happy ship for you?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the challenge of it. It was interesting being the first of class. Very interesting. So much so that I would have quite liked, when commissioned, to have returned to one of the class, even though I did not consider them to be a very good ship. Either for handling or for fighting. But obviously, with modifications, it could have become a good class, I think. They did very good work, I believe, later on, according to the book which I'm reading. But there was so much modification carried out that they were hardly recognisable as the same ship that we'd commissioned. They did very good work on D-Day, in fact, providing protection and headquarters ship work. There we are.
Can you tell me about your commission experience, please?
Yes, well, I was eventually shunted up to Loch Eilert, and fair to say that I was quite pleased when that spell finished, because the weather was so appalling up there, and I was very pleased to be successful. But finding myself in combined operations wasn't what I had expected, because I knew nothing about combined operations. I was eventually assigned to a landing craft being built in Middlesbrough, and the captain and I and engine room Martiff's and Cox, and we were assigned to stand by the building part during the building process. And I can't have been more than about a month before D-Day when we actually commissioned and set off from Middlesbrough down the east coast in company with other tank landing craft to Boston in Lincolnshire, where we worked up, and from where we sailed via Southend along to Portsmouth.
What number did this LCT have?
LCT 1126. My captain was Lieutenant Frank Willoughby, an excellent ship handler who had considerable experience of combined operations in the Mediterranean.
And what was your job in the ship?
I was first lieutenant. And apparently none of the crew had served in combined operations at all. We had to learn as we went along. And The The working up in Boston was interesting because when we were practicing Ehrlichan, we were proceeding on bass instructions, and indeed on direct bass supervision.